This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Draft Sickos, the show on the No Ceilings NBA podcast feed and YouTube channel where we talk everybody from the biggest of names to the deepest of sleepers. I'm your host, Maxwell Baumbach, and I am joined by the real star of the show, Stephen Gillespie. Stephen, how are you doing this lovely Sunday afternoon?
Maxwell, it's basketball overload, dude. So first off, this weekend, I'm trying to be a good husband by letting my wife, my mother-in-law, rather, just moved like 2 hours away from where I live now. So this is the first time we've ever had family within driving distance. So yesterday I was like, hey, Bree, why don't you go down? I'll watch all the kids and everything. No big deal. So I did all of that and decided that I was going to do that during the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament and NBA playoffs. So it's been dad overload. It's been basketball overload. But I'm excited to be on the show, man. How was your weekend?
It was good. I was able to get everything in. I was up super late last night getting my column done. So I did a good job of like scheduling and being like, all right, I'm going to do this. We're going to like go out and do this as a family and we're going to, you know, get like this in and whatever. And I realized I miscounted the number of games at one point where I was like, oh, there's 12. For some reason in my stupid brain, I was like, oh, there's 10 games. And I was like, no, there's 12. So I managed to make it work. Was up real late getting my recap column, which is going to go out tomorrow, done. But yeah, it was a good weekend. Got some quality family time in and still managed to watch a ton of basketball. So yeah, it is total basketball overload though, between this and the playoffs. Yeah. So like the playoffs are like such an important data point for us, I feel like, in terms of like projecting forward, seeing what's going to work. Like you gotta be watching it. So, it's been a lot, but we are going to talk about the Portsmouth Invitational today. We're kind of going to do a blend of things here. We're going to talk about guys that stood out, guys that maybe you were a little disappointed in, and not just talk about their performances in the event, but also just like kind of where we see these guys going forward, what we think about them. Because I think it's interesting, Stephen, you wanted to kind of touch on and open the show, talking about like, what do we make of an event like this and what are you looking for as an evaluator? Like how do you approach this type of event? How much stock do you put into it? And what kind of things are you looking to see on the court?
It's really interesting, Maxwell, because we talk about the NCAA tournament all the time. And we're like, the tournament doesn't make or break stock, but it does help and it can impact it. Right. Whereas we don't really have like a widespread Portsmouth Invitational, like do's and don'ts, you know what I mean? So I feel like we're kind of breaking ground a little bit here on what we look for in a tournament like this. I think, Maxwell, for one, for me, this is just like more data points for me in my scouting process. I'm like still like balls to the walls, like trying to get as much film in as I can to catch up and everything. And for me, this is an exceptional data point. And I went into this with preconceived notions, as I'm sure you did too. I mean, we just did a mock draft on who we thought was going to be best in the tournament like this, mixed with like draft stock and whatnot. And I went into this with preconceived notions, and I don't know, man, I feel like with the collection of talent, it is important to see like who stands out, like who wants the ball, who wants the moments, who's idly standing by supporting for the good of the team, for the betterment of the team, or who's just trying to play hero ball out there. I think this is a big, this is a big data point for scouts, man, because you're kind of getting a tell of personalities, of player types, and how seamless are they going to fit on your team? Because I doubt a lot of teams, Maxwell, are looking at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament to see who are we gonna sign undrafted free agent, maybe draft in the second round, who can take over our team. You know,
they're
they're wanting to look at this tournament and see like who can fill a role, who can we get to step in and be a positive contributor for our rotation. And that's kind of what I was looking for. I wasn't necessarily looking to see who got up the most shots, but some players I did want to see more offensive assertion out of their game. So it's kind of an amalgamation of a bunch of different things. But ultimately, I did put a lot of stock in to this tournament for some players, because some players did need to show out a little bit more to get on radars. What about you, man? Like, I know that you're pretty plugged in. You're more so plugged in than I am to, you know, NBA front offices and even some college, you know, personnel for, you know, scouting departments and stuff like that. So what are you kind of hearing with your ear to the ground for tournaments like this?
Yeah. So I try to kick as many tires as I could just going into this week, just to kind of get a feel for what teams were looking for. And the answers were really different across the board. I think like something that you illustrated really well is it is kind of like case by case to an extent, as far as, you mentioned, like some guys I want to see offensive assertion, some guys I want to see like, how do you play a role, and like that's, I think that's really kind of how teams approach it. Like some teams are looking for like certain kind of personality traits and things like that. They're almost more interested in how guys are going to interview with them at the event, because they feel like that we have a pretty good idea of who this player is already. Other teams are looking at certain players to see what they look like physically. So for some of the like low and mid major players, you know, are they going to be able to hold their own laterally? Are they going to be able to bang it out on the glass with bigger guys? If a guy's a really physical defender, does that still work when he's playing other guys that, you know, played in the Big East or something like that? So it is kind of case by case. But I think the biggest things that everyone kind of mentioned is like, is how they're producing scalable to the NBA. There's been a lot of talk on Twitter about accountability lately in the draft community. And I'm glad you mentioned that. Yeah, one thing I'd like to mention that there's a couple things I've mentioned that I've been trying to work on as an evaluator and as a scout over the last year. Is I feel like last year coming out of the event, I over-indexed way too much on just like good performances at the event and how that would affect guys going forward. And I don't want to say teams don't care if you perform well at Portsmouth, because that's not true. But they do care if you perform in a way that's scalable to the NBA or not. So there were a lot of guys that had games where they scored a lot of points. They also didn't really show anything new, and they didn't really have a game that is translatable to the NBA. So like last year, Tevion Jones had this awesome performance where he dropped 37 points. He did not get a two-way contract at any point during the year, didn't get a 10-day. Because Tevion Jones is a guy who doesn't really pass a whole lot. He shoots the ball a lot, and he was a poor defender. And like he played in the G League this year, and he was fine. But like certain guys, like you just plug him into a team concept, and it's, you know, it doesn't really work the same way. I think Kevin O'Banner was another guy that I thought like might get a two-way coming out of the event last year. He scored a ton of points. And he's big. Like he's a 6'8 guy that could shoot and rebound. But again, like he was just a guy who's, you know, very poor on the defensive end, doesn't move the ball very much. And teams just said, yeah, I don't really know that this is going to do anything for us. If you're, you know, when you're cold, what does this look like when you're a guy that stops the ball and shoots every play? So I think for me, the biggest difference to how I approached the event this year versus last year is not getting too wrapped up in like, well, I really got to do something with this guy because he scored a lot of points, or this guy took over a game. I think there are ways that guys can take over a game where the scalability becomes clear. Like if you look at Jumaane Kamara last year, and you know, you could say, oh, that's easy to say in hindsight, but I wrote a column last year ranking him as a top prospect coming out of the event, talking about how he should be a draft pick. So I think I earned that one. But I think with Kamara, like he was just so clearly physically on a different level last year, where it's just like, oh, like, yeah, like this guy moves like an NBA player. He's giant. He's strong. And he's really difficult to contain on the glass. He's going to make plays on defense. And he's got all these ways to leave his imprint on the game. And he's being assertive with his shots. And the shots fell for the most part for him at Portsmouth last year. But it also just showed like, hey, even when the shot's not falling, like this guy is just a force and he knows how to play. And he's going to compete really hard on both ends. And when you're 6'8 and you have good feel, that's enough. So I think the biggest thing was just like, our guy's going to do stuff that's scalable to the NBA. Other teams weigh the personality kind of side more. They want to get a feel for the guys if they're going to fit their team culture. But really, it was mostly just about like, is this an NBA game or not?
And you touched on a player's like physicality, and we talk about this all the time, Maxwell. It's like sometimes when we talk about like a lower major prospect, like when we talk about Wesley Cardet, we just say, hey, put on Chicago State. The guy that looks like he could play in the NBA just by looking at him, that's him. Like if you've never seen him before. And I think that that's very important to get all these players together because it's relative to the competition around them, right? Like when we see a player like Drew Pember at UNC Asheville to the competition.
I'm going to take some accountability on that one later. Yeah.
Yes. and for the accountability police out there, like
I think it's fair. I do generally think with the accountability thing, I think generally a lot of scouts in our space do a pretty good job of it. I would say that's the thing is I don't see a lot of people puffing their chest saying they're always right personally.
Yeah. Well, for the accountability police, I plan on, you know, just we'll spend the next hour and a half just talking about how we messed up. So it'll be fun. It'll be fun. The accountability police will be happy. But
that's true.
When we talk about the physical like appearance of players, I think it is important to get all these guys together in a room because, you know, again, Drew Pember at UNC Asheville, he looks different at the competition that he plays at, as opposed to when we get all these guys together, you kind of like really notice. And like other players too, like Enrique Freeman, you know, Eric Gaines, you know, there's a few players that when you get them to like level, you know, skills and things like that, it is important to be able to kind of look at them relative to one another and see how they play and even look. I mean, we hear stories about the NFL draft, you know, about how they get like all the quarterbacks together in a room and see like who emerges as like the alpha, who's the guy that's like getting people together and stuff like that. So I think it is important to look at the personality aspects as well as physical traits. And then obviously Maxwell, we're going to talk about how they performed, but yeah, I think it's important to kind of set the stage a little bit, you know, set the table to figure out why we think that these players might have impressed, maybe underwhelmed, and what that means for them moving forward in the draft. Because, Maxwell, teams are talking about the same things that we're about to talk about tonight.
That's right. So we are going to take a quick break. We're going to get to some of our top performers. And then at the end, we're going to kind of close with guys who may have disappointed a little bit and what that's going to look like for them going forward. So stick with us. We'll be right back with some of our top performers from the event. All right. We're going to start with one of the buzziest names coming out of Portsmouth. That is Isaiah Crawford. Louisiana Tech. He was a guy that we took pretty high in our mock, a guy we both thought pretty highly of coming into the event. Isaiah Crawford is a wing forward from Louisiana Tech, measured a little short, measured at like 6'5" in shoes, but measure with like a 7-foot wingspan. It's like, do I really care that he's a little bit shorter? Personally, not really. And he's 200 pounds. So like, big dude length strength, I truly didn't care less. But he averaged 16.3 points per game, 6.2 rebounds per game, about 2.5 assists, almost like 4 combined stocks last year.
Yeah.
Really efficient from the field, 41.4% from 3 last year, but the volume was low. What were you kind of – I guess let's start here. So Crawford throughout the event was not – like we mentioned, like not one of those guys that took over games, but I thought was a guy that was playing proper basketball every single second that he was on the court. He thrived at like the role player stuff. Like he played in a way that I could see him playing in the NBA, and he played that role really well. He knew where to be off the ball defensively. I had so many notes that were about him guarding guys of different size as well, where it's like, oh wow, he stuck with Eric Gaines. Oh wow, he like used his strength to wall off Tyler Burton. Like there were just so many notes of him like either holding ground, pushing back against bigger bodies, or sticking with guys that were quick. Yeah, like just the combination of his frame and size and then like mobility and off-ball awareness. Like defensively, he was awesome. On offense, I thought the biggest thing that stuck out were his reads. He didn't like get really hot scoring-wise at any point, but I just thought it really stood out. Like there were so many times where like I anticipated him to just make like the next pass, swing pass kind of deal. And instead he went in a different direction and made a more advanced read, but doing it at that 0.5 NBA speed and just seeing that development really quickly, getting the ball where it needs to go. Yeah, really, really sharp. The shot, I think, is going to kind of remain a question. I don't know that he moved anybody one way or another as far as like, is he going to shoot it on real volume? But I think when guys play with a certain level of intelligence and feel and show that they understand the game, I'm a little more willing to buy like, if someone tells him he needs to take more threes, he's going to take more threes. I do think without the shot, like he's obviously less interesting, but yeah, he was really good. Just good fundamental basketball with an NBA frame and showed that he really understands the game. So that combination of like size, savvy, strength and feel, like I love those guys, especially with like that body type. So I was really impressed by him. How did you feel about Crawford coming into the event? And then what do you think coming out of it?
Yeah. And let me just lay one more, I guess, kind of like housekeeping note here, Maxwell. We're going to talk about players that impressed us, right? So meaning that we might have had an expectation coming in that they've exceeded, or maybe the expectation was so high and they met it that was fantastic. So you're probably not going to hear all the players that performed well. You're not going to hear me like wax poetic on Joel Soriano because he did exactly what I thought he was going to do, right?
Yep. So
I wasn't necessarily impressed, but I had high expectations and he did a good job of meeting them, right? But Crawford, if you remember back to our mock draft that we did, he was the third overall pick in the snake draft. I took him right after Jalen Williams, and I could have took him number one and been just as happy either way, right? You mentioned how he didn't really do anything that was like, he didn't really like dominate the game, but you felt him during the game. Like his imprint was on there. I saw a lot of people that were at Portsmouth, like kind of compare him to like the Portsmouth Kawhi Leonard. Like that's exactly what he felt like. You know, he's not the tallest player out there, but his reach, Maxwell, you mentioned that it's around 7 feet. I'm surprised it's not longer. Just like he plays so well and so big on the floor. He's got these go-go gadget extended arms that he can contest and deny passing lanes. Like stats with him, as impressive as they are, it's the stuff that doesn't show up in the box score, Maxwell, that he closes off passing lanes. He denies passes into the paint. He like shuts off driving lanes for, you know, these smaller guards and like swallows them up. Like he does so much on the defensive side of the ball that you just can't get accredited to you numerically, but coaches love that stuff. Right. And so do scouts like us. I feel like he did a good job of like letting the game come to him. The first game, he didn't really do anything like spectacularly well on the offensive end. Like he didn't put up a bunch of points or anything, but just like the intangible aspects of his game, he did well. And then the next game, he just like kind of blew up. You know, we saw him show a little bit of the boring plays. You know, he put pressure on the rim, drawing fouls. He had some putbacks, tough defense support to force some missed shots. But he also had some really exciting plays, like when Quincy Guerrero put up a shot that he swatted, it seemed like it went to like the sixth row. I was watching this on my laptop and like almost jumped up out of my seat. Like that's how into the play that I was. He had some threes with decent range, hit a couple of tough layups. Obviously, a guy like him is going to crash the glass. He moved the ball well. I felt like he played into what his ideal NBA role is going to look like. And that's what I think executives were excited to see from him during those times. You know, seeing him against these other big name seniors that are kind of like thought of similarly. The fact that he looked the part against those peers, it really helped, I think, kind of solidify my liking of him. And he played that part too. Maxwell, he's getting some buzz, right? Like Sam Vecenie in his latest board, I think has him in the second round. Yep. Right now on my big board, I have him around like that 56 range. He could definitely rise one just because I like him that much. And as I'm continuing to watch film, I could raise him. And then we also have players that might not even declare within that second round range. So
exactly.
I don't think it's too far out of the question, Maxwell, that you could see him as early as like that 33 to 40 range within the second round, just because I think teams are going to want a guy who has been a 40% three-point shooter for consecutive seasons, who has really good defensive instincts and is positionally versatile. I just, you don't lose when you take a player like that, right? So I think that that's only building his draft stock.
Yeah, and I think once you reach like a certain like size and athleticism and feel threshold, like the worst you're going to be is like a guy who doesn't get totally roasted. And like, I think that's where Crawford is. Like, I think like the boring outcomes for him, like you could still do worse. And I think, especially like if he's there in the second round, it's like, there is like real great upside to that too. So yeah, I like him quite a bit. I think he's a guy that I've had like top 100 for most of the year. Honestly didn't really devote like a ton of attention to him, until doing the preview article. And I was like, oh yeah, like I've had this guy too low, like firm second round guy, worst for me right now. Let's go to one of the guys that you brought up, a really hot name right now, Tristan Annarunna, from Cleveland State. Do you want to take the lead on him?
Oh yeah, yeah. My bad. I thought there was going to be a little bit more of a lead in.
Leave the show on this one.
All good.
And that's another thing with these combine events. Sometimes the chemistry is just not there. The one guy will throw a pass, the other guy's not ready for it, and then the guy who threw the pass gets mad, then the other guy's mad at him. That's how it goes. That's what teams don't want to see at Portsmouth, is what we just did right there.
It's like the play I saw earlier in the playoffs where Luka Doncic like threw a no-look pass to Maxi Kleba, and Kleba was like positioning for a rebound, looking at the backboard, and then Doncic threw to him, and then he starts like jumping up and down screaming like Donald Duck style at him. I'm like, dude, that was your fault. What are you doing? But anyway, so Maxwell, I don't know if you remember what I said as we were like talking about the mock draft, like these honorable mentions, and I was just like kind of flippantly said, you know, Tristan Annarunna's got some fans. I'm not one of them, but he's got fans. So the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament MVP like made me eat my words like
fans a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. So it felt like he controlled the flow of the game kind of quietly, just like Isaiah Crawford. He was so poised on the court, like didn't really force anything. It's like this like perfect combination of humility yet confidence within his game. I loved offensively how well he played. Pretty much like he was a three-level scorer throughout the tournament. Like he wasn't afraid to mix it up on the perimeter, wasn't afraid to attack the basket, had a couple of nice mid-range, jump shots that went in. And he had some pretty solid moves around the basket, man. Like he just made it look so easy on the offensive side of the ball. He put so much pressure on the rim because of that versatility that he has. He's listed. And Maxwell, like when we list these heights and weights, these were provided like at the combine, right? So he's listed at 6'8", roughly 213 pounds. You're looking at a guy who shot 50% from the floor, only 32% from deep, and about 72% from the line. But if you were just to look at this outing, like at the Portsmouth Invitational Tournament, you would think that you're looking at like a 50% shooter from the field overall, but that shot looked a lot better in the tournament than I remember seeing in the film. And again, when we're aggregating all these players together and putting them on the court, he looked like he belonged on that floor as opposed to some of the other talent that was there. I think that the fact that not only was he a three-level scorer, but he got plenty of good looks in transition, and he was good in the half court. There were some players that only exclusively got plays in one aspect of that game or the other. I think that he played defense well. He had a couple of nice blocks and grabbed a decent amount of rebounds, but it wasn't anything like extraordinary. He just held up well, you know what I mean? Like, he was a really good, solid team defender that when the moment demanded it of him, he rose to the occasion to make a big play. I don't know if I'm going to like necessarily vault him all up my board because of this, but I now have to have him in a more, I have him more in a, like a considerable range now where he's not in like the doldrums of my draft board in like the lower 200s. He's now in kind of like that respectable, like 130 to 180 range where, depending on like how I'm feeling, like I might be able to vault him up a little bit more. I'm going to give him some more dedicated film study than I did coming into this tournament, because he did have fans. He did put up, he was productive. And now with this collection of talent, the fact that he was able to put in the performance that he did, I feel like I got to go back and do my homework a little bit more. But yeah, I just want to send out my most sincere apology to that throwaway comment that I had to Inaruna in the mock draft, because he certainly made me eat my words, and I am being accountable to that now. So that's where I messed up.
I wasn't like a huge fan of his either coming in. I think the biggest thing for me was like, he had a play style at Cleveland State that was not a play style that generally lends itself to like NBA role playing, where he just took like a lot of mid-range shots. Like he took, a lot of like mid-range, like floater, like, so he got to the rim a lot, but it was also like, I was never blown away with him athletically. Like, I thought he was like, he's like really fluid for how big he is. But yeah, like he just never like totally knocked my socks off in any of the games that I saw. But again, like doing the comments, like, oh wow, like he's a really great mid-range scorer. So like the 3-point percentage is bad, like career 26.6%, first year on higher volume this year, 32.2%. The catch and shoot numbers like over the years, just wildly up and down, but made like 46.9% of his pull up twos, which is like, that's not nothing. Like that's really interesting. Measured with a 7'2" wingspan, which is stellar. Like that's one of those things where it's like, when you're that big and you have that height, like that's a very big deal. I don't think it hurts either that he's like one of the younger players in the field. He's still 22 and turns 23 in June. And I know there's too many people that are like 23 is old for a rookie. And it's like, I agree. I know.
Sure.
But like he was also playing against guys that are like 26 with the way that Portland this year with so many guys. So
Jaime Jaca is starting in his rookie season for the Miami Heat right now, and was like the most assertive player that they had in the playoff game in their game one.
Yeah. We're not saying he's Jaime, but it just showing that like it's not a death knell to be old as a rookie. And he's a really good defender. Like I think he's gonna be able to cover multiple positions. I wish he was like a little bit stronger. But I do think he's one of those guys that like even at like 217 or whatever he weighed in at his height, he plays tough. And I think like I care about weight a lot, like you mentioned, like physicality and all that stuff. Like I care considerably about how strong the guy is. But I do think he's one of those guys that plays a little bit stronger than he looks. Like there's a difference between like Chet Holmgren skinny and like Taco Fall skinny. You know what I mean? Where it's like Chet Holmgren skinny, but like you don't really have to worry about him like bumping bodies as much as you did like a guy like Taco Fall, for example. The other thing with Inaruna is that I thought he made like every hustle play you could ask for. So if you're saying, well, I don't really buy the shot, I do think he warrants a level of interest by virtue of like, he's still going to do a lot of other stuff. He's going to get to the free throw line a ton. He took like 6 free throw attempts per game this last year. He's going to attack the rim really hard. He has like fluidity and counters to get to the rim with the ball. Like he's got these real ball skills. He's a really good passer. Like one of the things that set out was how many times he got to the rim and like met a rim protector and then made those like spray out passes from the rim, like just so seamlessly, which is one of those things that you have to, like a lot of NBA is just like have that pass. Like you've just got to have it, especially when you're coming in as an older rookie. But yeah, like just a real level of intelligence and movement. And at that size, like, again, you know how to play, you make plays on defense, you move the ball. There's a lot to like there. I think another part of the reason I probably was lower on him was like, he was one of those guys that came from Kansas State and Iowa State and like didn't really do much of anything there and then put up these big numbers at Cleveland State. And to me, I kind of mistakenly read that as like, well, he's just kind of like one of those guys who's going to beat up on smaller competition and he's going to get to Portsmouth and it's going to be difficult. And it wasn't. Like, I think he proved like, no, for whatever reason, just didn't work at those two spots. And he put in the work and got a lot better. I'd be really fascinated to know like what that kind of journey was like for him, because he's clearly just an awesome player at this point. So yeah, he'll probably be like around top 100 for me next time around, just by virtue of being that big and knowing how to play. The shot's definitely scary. Like the shot, like I'm not cut. Like I, in my column, I did, so last year, 11 guys got some sort of NBA deal at some point throughout the calendar year, that were at Portsmouth last year. I have one tier of like, these are guys that I think could get drafted. And then right below that, I have a tier of like, I think these guys are really good, but I'm not sure they'll get drafted. And that's the tier I have Enaruna in. We're like, if he does really well, if he gets an elite camp invite out of this and does really well there, I think that's on the table. Like, I think that path is way more for him now than it was a month ago. But I still think we need to like stay grounded a little bit. I had a scout compare him to Tomani Kamara to me, and like I pushed back on that a lot. Like Kamara was a better shooter during his pre-draft season. He was stronger, more athletic, better rebounder. I thought he was a better defender. I don't think he's Tumani Kamara, but I think he's really good. And I think that he's going to play in the G League, if nothing else, probably get himself a two-way at some point. Like, I think that's the path for him. And he should be proud. Like, he earned it.
Absolutely. And I think it's important, too, Maxwell, like, when you're breaking down these tiers of players, some people will just, like, easily throw away, like, if this dude's not getting drafted, like, why are you talking about him? Well, it's because NBA teams still care about, you know, the two-way guys.
You went on the margins. Yeah.
And your G League teams, right? Like your developmental systems. Like, you have to look at guys like this, and it's okay to love prospects that you have, you know, in the 100 to 200 range on your board that you think, because the margin of talent in that range, dude, can be like so real thin that all it takes is just like a personality trait, you know, or a mindset or something like that. And Enaruna showed not only did he have the skill, but he had the will and the right mindset and the confidence, and still played within the team concept to be able to walk away with the Portsmouth Invitational MVP. I think that speaks highly on all aspects of him, like as a basketball player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm right there with you. Next guy we had on our list was Riley Minix, who was our first pick in the Portsmouth draft that we did last week. Real good college season for Moorhead State. Played NAIA for a few years. Scored almost 21 points, almost 10 rebounds, 2.2 assists. 2.3 total stocks per game. I think one of the bigger questions with Minix coming into the weekend is like, where is the shot? He was really labeled as like a shooter coming into the year. It was like a 40% shooter at the NAI level. Never like fully actualized, but it got better throughout the season. Ended up at around 35% from three. In Portsmouth, the shot looked really good. I believe he made, I think it was like 7 out of his 13 or something like that, if I'm thinking the right numbers.
I didn't really care so much about the stats. Like, I like in my notes I wrote down like, okay, this was a good shot, this was a bad shot or whatever. I didn't really keep up with that, but for the most part, his shot selection, I'll talk about it a little bit more, but I was very impressed with the shot.
I thought it was really impressive, just like the functionality. Like, we talked about it with Brandon Carlson last week, like the way that he got into his shots, where it was like running into them, coming off a screen, like setting a screen and then moving into it. Like, it looked really clean. And I thought he just like played within the context of the game. Like, we talked about, like, do you look like an NBA role player? I thought he did a really good job of not forcing anything, but there were still times where his team went to him for that bailout shot at the end of the shot clock. And that stuff is still in there. And that matters. It's like, sometimes like a guy just ends up with the ball at the end of the clock and he chucks something up and he has those bailout chops in there. I thought he played with a real degree of selflessness. Like, there was a play where he had a breakaway and he could have dunked it, and instead he threw a lob to Jalen Williams, which is just a nice, cool. He like wanted to just give his teammate one. Like, that's like a nice thing that I think is endearing, and it's going to endear him to coaching staffs and front offices and things like that. I thought he, again, like, he had like some ups and downs, some games with the shot didn't go in. But yeah, I thought he looked really good laterally. He was where he needed to be. The fact that he rebounded really well was great.
Yes.
And was like bumping around skinnier guys and banging with the bruisers down low was big. Measurements were fine, like 6'8" standing reach, or 6'8" in shoes, rather, not a 6'8" standing reach. That would be a disaster. 6'9" and a half wingspan. He came in at like 227, something like that.
227.
Yeah. So came in like big, bulky. He's strong.
A little lighter than what he was listed at, which I think is good for his position.
Yeah. I agree. And I think he had maintained the strength and moved really well. So I loved what I saw to Riley Minix this week. I thought he was maybe one of the top guys coming in. I have him as like the top guy of this group coming out. I get if you want to argue for Crawford over him, I'm just more comfortable with Minix's like shooting. I understand like defensively he's a step behind. Maybe that's my like offensive bias. Like I love guys like Bryce Sensabaugh. Like I just love guys that score. So that's where I'm at with Minix. What did you think of him?
I mean, he looked like he should have been the number one pick in the Portsmouth mock draft, man. Like I thought his three traveled very well, and I'm glad that you brought that up because he's labeled as a shooter, only shot about 35% from in his first year at D1 basketball. But I think that that's just growing acclimated to the level of talent that was around him. And then if you look again, this amalgamation of talent that were similar statured players that were all like the man at their school, his shot traveled very well, dude. I loved it. You know, he had the spot up looks. He had movement shots. He shot from well beyond NBA range too. So it's not like his toes were hugging the line. I mean, NBA teams that are looking for a shooter, like on the margins, like this is your guy. Like that's ultimately the sales pitch with him. You know, the handle, I thought his handle looked pretty good too. It's not like he was Kyrie Irving out there crossing people up or anything like that, but I thought that he weaponized it really well. Like once he started getting the shot to fall and like teams were like really afraid to leave him open. And when they were trying to like recover on him, he did a great job of weaponizing that pump fake to either attack or like pass to the other side to keep the defense honest. I thought that he did a really good job with that. He had good size and used it well. I wrote that in my notes too. He wasn't afraid to mix it around in the paint, which you already touched on a little bit. And I think that he did like the connective passing thing a little bit too, you know, something that I wrote about in my Peyton Sanford piece over at NoCeilingsNBA.com. It's 100% free. You should go check it out. Is that you have to be able to do a lot of things well as a connective passer. And I thought that he did that. You know, he had a nice corner kick to Jalen Williams for a three. You mentioned the lob passes that he was able to do as well. The defense is about what I expected. You know, whenever he was switched on to some of the guards, like he got beat and stuff like that. You're not gonna put him on your team to be like a world beater on them. But he did do some things well once against like the wings and the forwards, which ultimately, if you're looking for a good team defender, he did the good team defender things really well. And he wasn't afraid again to put the ball on the deck. I have him on my board right now, like in that 98 to 135 range. Like right now for me and Maxwell, that's like a big grouping of players. I know it sounds like, but I'm still trying to sift through to figure out like who's the top dog amongst that group. But Riley being able to put up the performance that he did at Portsmouth, like really makes like that sifting out, that sorting process all that much more difficult because he has an NBA ready skill in the jumper and he's got size. The reach is not negative, but it's not like huge either. So you kind of wonder a little bit about that for measurements wise, but he's showing against like this level of competition that he can do the things that you need him to do as a shooter. Well,
yeah. Yeah. I like the shot. I just like how well-rounded his game is. Like he's another guy where it's a comfortably second round for me at this stage. Another guy that I'm probably going to do more film work on as we head into the draft. But I thought he was clearly one of the big winners of the event. Another guy that like we talked about a lot, and I've talked to a lot of people about this guy because I'm like, I'm tripping over myself. Like I'm really kind of confused with this guy. Eric Gaines from UAB was somebody you brought up. I'm going to let you take the lead on Eric Gaines. What do you think of Eric Gaines? Where were you kind of prior to this week? And now where are you coming out?
So I appreciate you letting me take the lead, but let's have the tough conversation now. Can we?
Okay. Let's do it. Let's talk about it out of the way.
Let's talk about the weight because this is a table setter. I feel like some people are going to be like you, Maxwell. And I don't mean that in like a negative way, but like some people are going to be like you and they're going to look at the weight and they're immediately going to be like, yeah, like anything that you can do in college at that weight is fine, but you're not going to see the NBA floor at 148 pounds. Like that's tough, dude. Like that's like my 11-year-old and my 5-year-old combined. like almost, you yeah, know, like yeah. It's not too far off from there. Maybe toss in my 3-year-old too, but we're, that's a tough number.
So let's do some context with that.
Yeah.
So there are some light guys in the NBA, but nobody quite this light. So the best, like the best skinny guy in the NBA is Trae Young, and Trae Young weighs 164 pounds. According to the, like, the NBA bios page, Jacob Gilliard and Marquise Noel, and Terquavion Smith all weigh 160 pounds.
Yeah.
So he is 12 pounds lighter than the lightest guys in the league, which if you are saying like, oh, I could gain 12 pounds in a weekend. First off, me too, buddy. You're not bragging. But two, I think, like, to me, this is where like my MMA brain kicks in, where it's like, okay, 12 pounds might not seem like a lot, but 12 pounds is a very large percentage of 148 pounds. Like, that is a big percentage of mass that he would need to put on. And as someone who's into like fitness and training and all this stuff, like, it's hard to put on a large amount of good weight quick, and it becomes harder the older you are. And I also think with Eric Gaines, the other conversation is going to be like, well, this guy's a senior, so like, why hasn't this happened yet? Like, we're not talking about a guy who just showed up on campus and grew late and he's really scrawny, whatever. Like, we're talking about a guy who's been at UAB, which is like a real deal program.
Yeah.
And was at LSU before that. Yeah. And he's, mm-hmm. and he's left there at 148 pounds. That's for me, like, it's, this is going to sound a little confusing maybe to some people. I feel better about Eric Gaines's eventual NBA prospects coming out of Portsmouth. I also would not be interested in being the first team to bring in Eric Gaines. And I would not be looking to like make him a priority right this second, because I think he's a second draft guy, because I think it's going to take him some time to put on his body weight. Because right now, like, Marquise Noel and Jacob Gilliard could play bully ball against him, and they are 5'7" and 5'8" respectively. And I'm just not interested in that. Like, I've seen too many guys, like, think about the struggles that Grady Dick has had.
Yeah.
Like, staying in front of guys that are trying to drive through him throughout this season. And now think about if he weighed 148 pounds, like, and it sounds like we're ragging on the guy, and that's like not our intent. Cause I think we're going to talk about,
well,
like,
I'm how not, good you are. We're, just to be clear.
Yeah. Cause we're going to talk about how awesome Eric Gaines was this weekend, and how, like, yeah, there's some genuinely special stuff here that I think like gives him a real chance to be a thing in the NBA. But yeah, I think for me, that's one of those things where it's like, am I going to draft him? No. Like, am I going to keep a really close eye on him and like bring him in if I see that he starts to fill out his body and produce in the G League? Yeah, I probably am. But I don't know that I'm like eager to be the first team that bites on Eric Gaines.
Let me ask you,
those things that could change too. Like, if I'm a team that brings him in for a workout and I think the shot looks good and I love his work ethic, and maybe there's some stuff that like injuries or whatever that prevented him from putting on the size, yeah, then maybe I would. Like, I'm not saying, you know, 100% certainty, you never know full context in our shoes, but I think he's still interesting. I just, 148 pounds is 148 pounds.
Let me ask you another, because I know you're like big into fitness and like, yeah, body and all that stuff too. Mm-hmm. And you touched on how hard it is to put on 12 pounds just to still be the lightest guy in the NBA. Like, you're working your tail off to still be like one of the lightest people in the NBA.
Yeah.
How much harder is it to put on 12 pounds when your job is running?
Probably really hard.
Like, that's what I'm
like
asking,
probably,
right?
Really hard, because like generally, like, the most you want to put on to minimize fat gain is a half pound per week. So if you're looking at 24 weeks to put on these 12 pounds, and most NBA guys, from what I know, tend to lose weight during the season anyway. Yep. Like, guys put on weight and then they lose it throughout the year. That's a tough ask, and it's probably going to take some time with younger guys and with these NBA coaching staffs and stuff. Some guys can't put on a lot of muscle really quick. Like, they just have incredible resources that your typical person doesn't have, and they've got bodies that your typical person doesn't have, to be honest. Like, you're not playing in the NBA unless you've got you know, some really serious physical gifts and a pretty crazy work ethic. Like, you don't get there by being a bum with bad genetics who sits on the couch all day.
Yes.
So those two things are definitely going to work in his favor. But it's going to take some time.
100%. Right. So let's move into how awesome and how much Eric Gaines impressed
me. He was
me.
Stellar.
Dude, so first off, despite weighing in under 150 pounds, he put on a heck of a show, man. Like, he had some of the most spectacular plays, and it was nice to see him do it in an environment that wasn't just like a social media mixtape. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Because he has a highlight film that if you just put up like the crazy stuff Eric Gaines has done in his career in college, and that's all you watched, people would probably say, like, why in the world has this guy not already been in the NBA? Like, he has, his athleticism at his weight is just phenomenal. You know, his speed is well known, but I appreciated, Maxwell, the things that I think that doesn't get discussed about him, because we are so fascinated with like that quick twitch and that like vertical pop, is how much he changed his pace at Portsmouth. It wasn't just guns blazing the entire time. Like, he was very good in a half court environment. He chose his spot up opportunities well. He did some good shots off movement with the ball in his hand, like live dribble plays. He had double digit assist games too. So like, he was mapping the court. Shout out to J. Kyle Mann. He was mapping the court very well in Portsmouth too. So this concept of him where he's just like this breakneck athlete, that was very much not on display there. Now, he did have a couple of like highlight plays where he did race to the rim and did throw it down with a vengeance. But I just thought that the balance of jumpers and drives that he had, like the balance of, okay, I'm going to assert myself into this play, or I'm going to run a pick and roll and throw a lob, or, you know, whip pass to the corner, or just a smart entry pass or pass to the next guy. Not everything with Eric Gaines was a highlight level play, which I think that's what scouts want to see with a player like him, is like the court IQ that he had. You know, he had a couple of big blocks too during the tournament. So like, not only was the athleticism on display on the offensive end, but he had some, you know, tip passes, you know, shooting the passing lanes, recovery blocks, good help defense. Like, he had these moments in the tournament, Maxwell, that just spoke to how intelligent of a basketball player he is, not just like this athletic specimen who is undersized, which I thought was fantastic. Right now, I have him outside my 150 right now, just like on the cusp of it. But I don't think, I spoke earlier how I have this range of like 98 to like this 150 range. Like, he could easily shoot up to be within my top 100. And I think this tournament did bode well for him. I think that people walked away really impressed with how he performed.
Yeah, he was fantastic. Like, it just, the biggest thing that jumped out to me is he's been kind of a subpar shooter over the years. I don't think the shot needs to be as good as I thought it did coming into the weekend, because he's just so hard to stay in front of. Like, he is exceptionally fast. And like you said, like, he picks his spots so well. Like, he knows when he can get into the heart of the defense, and it happens so fast. Like, he catches it, he's gone, and he can take off from so far away that it's like, oh, he just took like a step to the elbow and now he's dunking. Like, it's crazy. It's crazy. And his feel is great. Like you mentioned, like, he has like what I call last second fluidity, where he's one of those guys that can like get to the rim, go up and just, nope, don't like what I see, and like pass out and hit the open man. Like, he's seeing everything all the time. It shows up on defense too. Like, he's all over the place as a playmaker in a good way, because he has that outlier speed where he's just able to get to everything, gets a ton of blocks for a guard, because he can recognize something at the rim, get there really quickly, recover back if need be. So like, I always think it's important to like not close the door on a prospect. And if you were to say like Eric Gaines is going to bring value to the first team that comes in, that brings him in, I think it's going to be because, like, he has outlier athletic traits, and I think he's kind of got outlier feel too. Like, he's a really sharp player, and when you're that smart and see things that quickly and can move that quickly, you're able to do a lot of really cool stuff. And I think Eric Gaines he's got a really bright future ahead of him, kind of regardless of where he ends up playing professional basketball. And I think that, like, the reason we're still talking about him as like a guy who impressed us is because I do think there's like a real deal NBA path for him, because anytime you are that athletic and that smart, like, you can get away with being skinny. Like, some guys just do it, and you can get into the semantics like, oh, like, what if, you know, he gets bullied in the playoffs or whatever. It's like, to play in the playoffs, like, you got to play in regular season games first. And like,
yeah,
I think this is a guy that can get there at the very least if his body fills out. So,
and only 400 players make an NBA roster too, right? Like, yep. So even him making the G League, even him being on a two-way deal or an exhibit 10, like, for what you're looking at in Portsmouth, like, again, you know, good teams went on the margins of Maxwell. And mm-hmm. like, I wouldn't mind, like, you know, draft and everything's done, I'm assembling like a G League team. Like, Eric Gaines might be my starting point guard, you know, like,
yeah.
Wait, be damn. You know what I mean?
The one thing that worries me a little bit though is like watching London Johnson in the G League this year and how much he got posted up. Like, I feel like G League teams kind of bully the post more than NBA teams do. So, like, that's another one of those concerns where it's like, if I E10 him, like, is he even going to have these problems in the G League? Like, the open court, up and down nature of the G League would allow him to, like, thrive offensively. Yes. And he's so much more selfless than your standard, like, scoring G League point guard that, like, that's a great thing to have, too. But I would worry about the strength there still.
And fans are going to love watching him.
Oh, too. Totally.
You know, he's going to be like, he's going to be like on the G League team posters. You know what I mean? Like, he's going to be one of the best players that fans want to see the most.
Yep. Let's do Dante Scott.
Yeah.
Who, like, I was not prepared to come to this weekend being like, maybe Dante Scott's good. Like, to be completely honest, like, I wrote my preview column. So Dante Scott, 6'8", 236, 6'11 wingspan, had this kind of like, will he, won't he career at Maryland where like, he had like a good, I think it was like his freshman year was good. And then like every year it was like, here, Dante Scott lost 20 pounds. And it's like, ooh, okay. And then you'd watch and like, he looked exactly the same and was the exact same player. And he spent this 5-year career at Maryland where like, it's going to sound harsh. I don't think he got better. Like I don't understand. Like at no point during his,
I think that's fair.
Maryland was I like, oh wow. Like Dante Scott added this wrinkle to his game. He just looked like the same guy every year. So coming into this, I was kind of bored with Dante Scott. I was coming to this feeling like, all right, like, I guess we kind of like have to invite him because like he's 6'8" and long and like can kind of shoot and kind of defend and like find decision maker. And he's got size. So like teams are always going to look at that, but like, what is like the sell? Like, what am I supposed to buy into with a guy who didn't get better? And then he was good. He was good. He made a bunch of really good passes. He's just got like that size, strength, feel combination that I love to talk about all the time. Shot came and went like it kind of often has for him. But his team was brutal. Like he was on a team that really struggled. The guards were having just an awful time, and he was the one guy who felt like was really tying it together for his team. Like he physically up to the task, but was sort of a leader out on the court, was moving the ball really well. Again, the passing just really, really popped for me. And I just kind of went back to like, oh, this guy's like being a game manager right now. And like, aren't there worse things you could have than a guy this size that really knows how to play? And like, if you can get the shot to a respectable place, like maybe this is a guy who like, maybe the reason he was never the star at the Maryland is just because he's so good at being like a helping hand. Like I know I shouldn't be talking myself into Dante Scott. But part of me just wondered like, maybe you change of scenery and like, he just can like blossom and be fine. But then another part of me is like, maybe he's just like Darius Days where it's like on paper, like the idea is there of like, yeah, he's big. He can like shoot a little bit and whatever. And he's got some bounce. And then like, he just never really materializes. Like, I think he's probably more likely that. But I didn't come into the week expecting to be like, oh wow, I'm so glad Dante Scott's on the court for his team right now. Like he's really holding everything down.
Yeah. And real quick, David Bentley, you wrote that I missed the Talon Cooper part. Again, there's a lot of prospects that we were high on that actually did well that we're not going to necessarily cover in this piece, but yeah, just real quick, Maxwell, I thought Talon Cooper did a fine job. You know, he did about as well as anticipated, you know,
Shot wasn't super great for him this week, but I think it's like, we kind of know we can shoot. Like some of the things we talked about, so you got to remember the prior sample. Defense is really good. I thought the rebounding was the thing that popped with Talon Cooper.
Rebounding
like,
was good.
Talon Cooper was like, flying on the glass, measured well too, which is big. Looks like strong. Again, like so many of these guards, it's just like, all right, this guy's got like a 6'2 wingspan and weighs like 180 pounds or whatever. Like there's just a lot of guards that are really similar. And for Jalon Cooper to come in, measure with a near 6'8 wingspan, almost 200 pounds, and show that like he just knows how to play basketball and like can really defend and leave a positive imprint on the game even when the shot's not falling. Like I still really like Jalon Cooper. Like I still kind of view Jalon Cooper as like a guy that like I would not be surprised at all if he's on a two-way at some point during the next year.
Shout out to the sickos out there, Maxwell. Like we're doing a Portsmouth Invitational Tournament and like we have snubs that are like,
what are you talking about Jalon Cooper? Yeah. Like this is not like, not a lot of podcasts where like the people in the chat are like, oh, I hope I didn't miss the Jalon Cooper part. I love it. I love our audience.
Dude, we have the best people out there. Like real talk, you know, I think that that's fantastic that we have, you know, what about Jalon Cooper going on in the chat? Mm-hmm. That's fantastic. Back to Dante Scott. He had real fans for like a long time. Years. I remember seeing boards where, you know, Sam Vecenie had him as a draftable dude. And like, I've always kind of monitored him as well. And I just kind of like you, man, like I was just kind of like, man, like very tepid, very lukewarm.
Frustrating. On,
And I'm glad that you were impressed with him, Maxwell. Like I'll be 100% transparent and honest. He wasn't a guy that like really stood out to me. Like I took notes on everybody throughout the game, like would pause the game film, like take notes on everything that happened in the play and move on. And I wasn't necessarily blown away by him, but I guess I wasn't disappointed either. I do think that a player at his size that one can rebound as well as he does, that can screen as well as he does, and can pass too. Like you always kind of have to take stock of that, right? I also felt like there were moments that he knew he was going to shoot too when he caught it, and that's kind of always been like the disappointing thing with Dante, is like kind of like similar to Quincy Grier, who actually was like way worse, but
he had like really good game the first game, and I was like, what? And then like,
and then it's like, okay, like let's see who Quincy Grier really is. And it was actually him. But yeah, Dante, he had some nice passes, but he had a ton of mysteries, dude. I think that's kind of like the appeal with him, is like maybe he's got kind of this like quasi stretch big. The handle was actually pretty nice too.
Yeah, he's got ball skills. Like, and he's 6'8".
That's impressive, right? I did like the post finishing too, like the inside scoring, I think was very strong for him, and where he made a lot of effort. I wasn't like moved one way or the other defensively either. Like I felt like there were some times where he just like did a really good job of like denying a play in the post or even an entry pass. But then there were some where he was just like, okay, I'm going to go ahead and get ready for my next offensive possession. Mm-hmm. When working my way, through my prioritization of boards and like film and stuff like that, I feel like I really need to give him more devoted time, especially just to kind of see like how his performance at Maryland was again this year compared to years prior and how it stacks up to this Portland film. But I think right now I would comfortably have him somewhere in like the 150 to like 180 range on my board. Because you know like how people are always running up putting guns to our head, Max. And I was like, where do you got Dante
Scott? Where's Dante Scott? Right, tell me now. Like,
like I can't even go to the grocery store without a gun being put to my head and being asked about Dante Scott. Mm-hmm. But I think that, you know, anywhere from like 150 to 180 is where I would have him right now. And again, you know, it's just I felt like I was watching Dante Scott. You know what I mean? That's kind of how I felt in the game with him.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. The next guy we're going to get to is Kyle Rode from Liberty. A guy I got to interview, a new guy that you brought up that you wanted to mention as a needle mover. I agree. And if you're in big, you're in the bag for him because you interviewed him. I interviewed Kyle Rode and then made a list previewing the event. And I picked guys that I thought were going to pop. And I didn't name Kyle Rode as one of those guys. And so I was kind of being like, I like him. I don't love him. But and that was post-interview. But I thought he did great.
I didn't interview him. But first off, crushed the interview, by the way. I love the interaction
to talk to. Yeah.
he feels like very personable, but he's also obviously like super sharp dude, like knows the game. Wouldn't be surprised to see him coach, you know, basketball at some point, just because like the way he talked the game through, very impressive, right? But he played up to the competition, you know, coming out of Liberty, you know, 6'8", 216. That's what he measured at the combine. That's not like a team listing. So he's got real wing forward size to his game. He hit a couple of big threes game one, and one of them was from like Steph Curry range. Like, you know what I mean? Like it was ridiculous. And then he was active on defense too, like throughout the entire tournament. And I feel like that's going to be kind of the question. Like, how is Kyle Rode going to get a foot in the door as like another knockdown shooter, especially with a guy like Riley Minnix within the same field of competition as him, right? He had some really good tip passes. He nabbed some steals. And then he got out in transition too. I was actually really impressed with the amount of transition plays that Kyle Rode was involved in, because I think you kind of let's just be real, accountability police. You know, I'm gonna be real right here. White dude out of Liberty, you just figure he's gonna stand in the corner and knock down shots.
Yeah,
right?
Like, yeah.
That's kind of the perception, right? And you watch the film and you even kind of see that a little bit. I think that the amount of transition that he was involved in, like, I think that's really gonna impress a lot of scouts that were there to see him in particular. And as the tournament got on, dude, like you could see the confidence in him grow, where he's like hitting shots more off movement, you know, or even take a dribble and sidestep, things like that. And again, really weaponize the jumper, like get the pump fake going for drives and passes. Was he perfect? No, he wasn't a perfect prospect. Been there. And like, be honest, I think if I had to give like perfection a grade, like Isaiah Crawford was it.
Riley Minnix
was it. And then everybody else was like, yeah, they were good.
They're good, but yeah.
Yeah, Kyle Rode, though, I mean, he didn't mix it up on the glass as much as I would like to see for a player of his size. You know, his defense was a little feast or famine. But the fact that, again, that he's in there, like, playing really good team defense, the shot is enough, you know, to get him a foot in the door. And, again, the types of shots that he was able to get, the range, the variability that he had within the shot, I wouldn't be surprised if teams want to take a little bit more of a dedicated look at him. And again, I want to give some of these guys more dedicated film study. But again, gun to my head at the grocery store, if someone asked me, he's going to be knocking on the door of my 150 easily. It just doesn't – I don't know how high I'm willing to put him. But I wasn't – much like how you were talking about with Dante Scott, I wasn't prepared to come in and see the level of impact that Kyle Rode was going to have in the Portsmouth Invitational tournament. But here I am standing corrected.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I liked Kyle Rode a lot in this event. Like the shot kind of came and went at points, but it's like, again, it's one of those guys where it's like, yeah, like kind of like we mentioned with Tom Cooper, like this is a guy that was near 40% over a 5-year college career. So it's like, I know he can shoot. Like, I don't need him to make shots in these particular games to know that he can shoot the basketball. The passing really stood out. Like, some like flashy, mesmerizing, creative yet functional stuff. Like, he had a baseline drive where he slung this behind the back pass. He was just really moving the ball. Him and Isaiah Crawford had some, like, there was a game where they were just like throwing unbelievable passes the entire time. It was like one of my favorite games of the weekend. Yeah, to your point, I thought like the athleticism in the defense was like way better than I anticipated. He moved really well defensively. Yeah, I was really impressed with that. He athletic tested pretty well. Like, if you look at his shuttle run time, his three-quarter court sprint time, his reaction time. By the way, Isaiah Crawford reaction time was, like, the fastest.
Yeah.
I know that we keep going back to Isaiah Crawford.
Not a surprise.
But, like, like crazy. Like, you see it guys, like, that can mirror on defense and stuff, and it's like, oh, wow, that's really cool. But, like, man, good for Isaiah Crawford. But yeah, Kyle Rode, I thought, was just like a lot better, or Kyle Rode was a lot better than I anticipated him to be defensively. Like, he genuinely made an impact. He's strong, which we knew. But yeah, he was just more like agile and doing a little bit more as like a playmaker on that side of the floor, like tipping passes, sticking with guys. Had some missed things, you know, had sometimes where he got beat. But ultimately, like, I thought he did a really good job on that end of the floor. And I think going in, he may have been a guy that people perceived as like, oh, maybe this is a guy that, you know, is kind of more there for the overseas teams or whatever. And like, I'd have a hard time not like taking a pretty hard look if I'm an NBA team for a 6'7" guy that passes like that. And like, now we know, like, he can move a lot better. Mid-major school, maybe not like super top of the line athletic resources. But yeah, just like smart kid, dribble, pass, shoot. Like really struggled as a finisher this year, but I looked at past years when like he wasn't the man and he actually did pretty well at the rim. Like he was like a solid finisher in past years. So like, I just think like if he's not the guy and he's more tertiary, like he was this weekend, like you can see what he can do as a second side playmaker. You can see what he can do as a shooter and like, you just not get killed on defense. And like, that's kind of all you're asking for off your bench at a certain point. Like,
yep.
I think there's a real like path for him to get on a two way at some point in the next year.
I'm not drafting him for pressure. I'm drafting him for gravity. You know what I mean? Like
exactly.
Yeah. Not drafting, but like maybe signing or whatever. Like Kyle Rhodes sure. coming to my team to let people pressure the rim, not to do it himself. You know,
and like just knowing that like he's got some quickness and bounce now. It's like just a little bit easier to sell absolutely. Yourself on the idea of I have to be a two dribble pull. Like maybe now we've seen him like get all the way to the rim. We've seen him get chased offline and make a slick pass. Like it just looked good for him. We're going to take a quick break. On the other side, we're each going to do one of our accountability corner on guys that we liked that didn't kind of hit for us. And then real quick, I think we'll just do like a quick rundown. Dirty Dancer had a quick question of like guys that we think could get combine invites. So we'll address that too.
Sure.
So stick with us. We'll be right back. All right, let's do our accountability corner. Do you want to go first? I'm fine either way.
We'll let you go first, man, because I feel like this is going to be the big one.
This one hurts. It was Drew Pember, who I covered for No Son Unturned and like really wanted to see make it. I want to talk about a little bit about like his game and why it didn't work, but also like, not how, I guess how I messed up as a evaluator, because it's like silly to write a guy off after Portsmouth. Like it's never a done deal. It's like he didn't do well at a combine event, but I think he's further away. He's further away than I think I thought. So Drew Pember is like this stretch big with skill who can like sling the ball and knock down threes. And like, he's got these rim protection instincts and whatever. I took him in the Portsmouth mock because I thought it would be interesting. But I mentioned like, oh, he's got to be a jumbo four. Like, I don't think he's a five at the next level. Because
you
like,
nailed that, by the way.
That was my concern because he'd had these games in college where the physicality was an issue. And it led to a lot of turnovers. Where the physicality was a problem here was just rebounding. Even as a four. Even in the lineups where they had another big on the court with him, he was really far behind the curve from a physicality standpoint. He allowed a lot of offensive rebounds. Straight up wasn't boxing out.
No.
At times, which I was like, what? Hold on. Like, I can understand if you get overpowered, I need you to throw a body on a guy. Like, you can't have that. And I don't know if that's a function of having played mid-major basketball and just being a guy that's like, ah, I'm 6'10". I just grab it. Like, I was really surprised how much he struggled. Like, anytime the other team would send somebody to crash. I also thought the offense was worse than I thought.
Dude, it was so bad.
This was the bigger thing for me. And like the fluidity was a bit of an issue. He had some issues with like blowing off. I mean, obviously like at the rim, he got moved around. Like that was stuff I kind of expected to see. What I struggled with was the offense because the shot didn't fall at times, which is fine. Then he had other games later where he made shots.
Yeah.
The ball stopping was what surprised me. There was a lot more like, way too much time on the shot clock and I am shooting a three from like deep behind the NBA line. He's one of those guys that could like really orchestrate the offense at UNC Asheville. And like, it seemed like something that you could just easily like, oh yeah, like, yeah, put him in a horn set, have him run a zoom action. Like you can do all this little stuff with him and it'll just blend right into being a role player. And like, instead it was just like, really like, oh wait, like you just kind of did like a, it's my turn style possession right there. And like, you should not have done that. You look at like how the other bigs just like handled themselves throughout this event. Like even a guy like Joel Soriano, who's like not a super skilled passer and like had some bad turnovers, but it was never like, oh, Joel Soriano is like decided to get his own bucket here. Like guys just do a much better job of playing within the flow of the offense than him. I just don't know what he would do on an NBA court like tomorrow. Like I don't know. I used to think maybe, you slot him at the four and whatever. It's like, I just think the physicality is going to be a big issue. I think the rebounding is going to be a big issue. Measured with only a 6'10 wingspan. So not only is he skinny, he's a little bit stubby given his height.
209 pounds.
209. Yeah. So just
below listed.
Like 10, that's like 11 pounds below Christian Brown is like a way to think that. Like that's just like context. Like that's a guy that I just like to use as like standard wing weight. Like that's rough. It's going to be a much longer climb for him if he gets there. I thought he was the guy that I don't know. I don't think he was like on like a sure thing to get like an elite camp invite or anything like that. I think guys should always play in this type of event. I think as an evaluator, what I kind of took away from this is to like be careful about when you are giving context and when you might be giving excuses for a guy. Like this is the thing I've tried to like really hold myself accountable with is like, I think it's important to understand the context of like, okay, sometimes he's had a lot of turnovers in these games against big teams because he's getting double teamed and whatever, but also to like not write those things off and make sure your eye is staying sharp as far as like, okay, well, why is he struggling rebounding wise against these teams? What is it that's leading to this problem? Like, I think that is where I may have gone wrong with Pember. Is like, I think I just gave him the benefit of the doubt in too many circumstances. I think the one part that I wouldn't have accounted for kind of regardless was I thought the offense would be a little more seamless in terms of just like mm-hmm. the flow of the offense. But I think with the physicality in particular, that's the one thing where I'm like, yeah, I should have been a lot more of a stickler about that.
And I'm glad you brought up the context because I feel like, and again, like you rarely should take such like a dramatic take on a player for just like a handful of games. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this at the beginning, like what are you looking for? And it's important to remember that case by case piece that we said, Maxwell, I'm sorry, dude, but like I put a lot of stock into the Drew Bember like transition into from this tournament because there's a lot of similarly built players. I mean, Enrique Freeman was not the biggest player out there either.
No,
you know, he looked like a baby
8 pounds heavier. Yeah.
Yeah. But he had such an undeniable motor. Like how timid Pember was in this tournament. I'm sorry. Like I was kind of already on the fence, but like, no thanks, man. Like, I don't know, like what part about have I seen on film? And again, context, like, why does a guy stay at a smaller school with all that production? You know what I mean? Like, why does a guy transfer from Tennessee to UNC Asheville, balloon up like this, and then continue to stay? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Is there doubt?
It's nice to see the loyalty.
There?
But yeah, to your point, maybe it's that. And maybe it's pretty fun to average 20 and 10.
Yeah. And then again, like you look at these things and you wonder, and then you see in this setting, like, he's not assertive. You know what I mean? Like, he settled on his shot a lot. Like, the handle wasn't there. You mentioned this is a guy that averaged 3.5 assists this year, Maxwell.
Yeah. Yeah.
And he was either chunk or, you know, turnover, essentially. You know, I mean, his first game was miss after miss. And that first game was horrendous. But he did get better.
It was so rough in the first game. Like, just allowed
the,
so much on
the scoring got better, but the rebounding was bad throughout the entire tournament, dude. Like, he's not physical at all. Like, Inaruna bullied the mess out of this guy. Like, just
and that's the thing,
bullied.
Too. Like, we talked about earlier with, like, the difference between, like, being, like, guys that are skinny but strong and, like, guys that just are skinny. Like,
wiry.
Drew Bember is just skinny. But, yeah, like you mentioned, like, Enrique Freeman, who's, like, not 240 pounds. Or Tristan Rune is not 240 pounds. But, like, those dudes can move you, and they want to. They want to put their body through you and get to where they want to be on the court. And they did. And like they just played with a level of will that kind of wasn't there for Pember.
Yeah. I'm just like, dude, I don't know how many NBA teams are knocking at the door to get him. You know what I mean? And like, this not to say that he can't like ever put on basketball shoes and like play pro somewhere.
Sure.
You know what I mean?
Like, and again, like it's important to remember, like he's still 6'10". Still has some help defensive instincts, still has real ball skills, and still is like a knockdown shooter. It's just going to require some rewiring. And sometimes that can happen really fast. Sometimes it takes a while. Sometimes it doesn't happen. But I think if you're an NBA team or like someone like me that was like pretty eager to like see what was next, like maybe you just got to reassess and be a little bit more patient with it or just say, hey, not now, maybe later.
For sure. All right. So let's keep the accountability train rolling, Maxwell. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about the guy that I feel like I need to kind of backpedal a little bit in where I was on him. And that's Kevin Cross, dude. Mm-hmm. Like I don't I really want to kind of like temper like this conversation, because I think like it's two different conversations that we're about to have with Kevin and the one that we just had with Pember. You know what I mean? So like, it's not like I'm coming on here to slam Kevin, but I just didn't feel him through this tournament at all. You know what I mean? And like, this is a guy that I took, I think, fourth on the mock, and I was kind of like, I was kind of halfway expecting you to want him too. And then like, maybe I go Jameis in battle. I felt like I felt battle more throughout the tournament than I did.
Oh, for sure. Battle, like in battle, had one of those games where it's like, I don't know that I'm the biggest Jameis in battle guy, but Jameis in battle is a guy who's like big and strong and can undeniably shoot the cover off the ball. So it's like, if some team's like, everywhere, I really want to buy it, like I can't tell them no. Like I get it. Yeah.
Yeah. And Kevin Cross, like similarly to Drew Pember, was a guy that even if the shot wasn't there, and you kind of establish like a pecking order in environments like this, and you know, maybe his shot making wasn't a priority, but I thought at least he would crash the boards more. I thought at least he would move the ball more. I mean, this guy averaged almost 5 assists per game for Tulane. So I didn't feel him, dude. Like, he was barely a factor throughout this whole tournament. I think he hit 1-3 on the first game, which had good range on it, so that's encouraging, right?
Yeah, that three was, it was a good shot.
But some of the passes that he did pass were wild, dude. Like, ugly turnovers, like unnecessary passes, like off of jumps, like during shots, just unnecessary passes. He missed the majority of his threes, like beyond that first game. He did hit like a post shot or a mid-range shot, like sporadically, depending on the game that you were watching. Defense was okay. Yes. You know, that didn't attack the class that much. You know, it just, I felt like he was just kind of there, you know what I mean? And like, we had texted each other throughout the tournament on players that we thought were like, Radford was a guy who like would have a good performance and then he would like disappear. You know, there was a few guys that were like that. I don't think that we even talked about Kevin, and we talked about a lot of players back and forth. He attended the tournament. Like, that's like the nicest thing that I could say about him. And it's not that he was bad, it's just that I had expectations that he was gonna he's one of these multifaceted guys, like on paper for Tulane, that could do a lot on the floor on both sides of it. And I just felt like he didn't really do anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's fair. My defense of him would be, I wonder if he is more of a system player. And I don't mean that in like a, he's a system quarterback and can only operate a certain way kind of thing. I mean that more in like, some high field players I think do really well in the chaos of a combine, like Andrew Nembhard and like J-Dub are like prime examples of like, they went to the NBA combine and were just like, oh, I'm way smarter than everybody on the court. I'm going to do whatever I want out here. I think some guys need a context and need like a system to operate within. And then once you give them that structure, they can really pick things apart and they can really operate. Where I wonder with Cross, if it was a case of like, he just came into this environment and it's chaos and he's like, well, I don't really know where my guys are going. I don't really know where they're going to be. And then that just made it a little bit tougher for everything to pop and for him to find his footing. I think teams are going to maintain a level of interest in him again, because it's just like, guy's pretty big with a unique game and a lot of skills. So like, I don't think this was as rough for him as this was for Pember. Like, I think he's like kind of in the middle of the pack among this crew at this point. But I did think that there would be some games where he was just going to kind of outclass everybody, and that didn't happen.
Yeah. And I feel like you mentioned like the styles of these tournaments. I feel like the bigs were heavily featured, you know what I mean? Because like, no matter what level of basketball you play, you got a guy, you can just throw him the ball in the paint and let him go to town. Right. Like, and that's what we saw, like guys like Tolu Smith or Joel Soriano or Samuels, you know, or Isaac, you know, for a Washington State, you know, a lot of those guys like had big, big numbers because it's easy just to dump the ball to the big man. You know what I mean? Or a guard in transition. We saw a lot of guards put up a lot of shots like East or Estrada.
Yeah.
Or Santiago Vescovi. It's harder for, like you mentioned, like these like kind of system wings to fall, but Crawford, I guess, probably like a whole another class of like system wing player, I would say. But similarly, like I talked about this when I drafted both of them, is like they both are so like positionally versatile and can do so much on both sides of the floor that I felt like somehow, some way Kevin Cross was going to be involved in like the mix of things. And again, he was just kind of like a passenger in a lot of ways. And that's where I'm disappointed is sure. Because like, he's one of these guys that does so many things on both sides of the floor. Surely something he did was going to stand out amongst this group. And it just didn't happen. And that's why I'm saying he's disappointing to me in that regard. Again, a completely different context than what we're talking about with Pember. But I have Kevin like in my top 125. Mm-hmm. I don't necessarily feel inclined to do anything with
ranking
of him, you know?
Yeah, I don't think this was a Pember thing where it's like, oh, this like legitimately changes like how I view him. It was just a little disappointing. Let's end on a positive note and do the Dirty Dancer question that we've got here.
Okay.
Besides Crawford, who gets an invite to the draft combine? Let's include Elite Camp just to kind of like hedge our bets and make sure we're kind of covering guys that we would like to see. In my column, I have like five guys that I like feel pretty strongly. Like I like more than the rest of the people in the Portsmouth crop.
You just want to like, we're doing this on the fly, everybody. So if it seems a little scattered, you just want to pick like a five that we feel confident about.
Sure. Yeah. So five-ish. I'm just using five because that's what I did for my column. Mine are Riley Minix, Isaiah Crawford, Jalen Williams from Auburn, who we didn't talk about much, but like, again, just like solid, good athlete, large, knows how to play. Tristan and Aruna, and then Brandon Carlson, who we didn't talk about much. I get like Brandon Carlson is a guy who might not be everybody's cup of tea because, again, like not the most physical guy, not a great rebounder for his size, real skinny, but like just a guy who's 7 feet tall and can movement shoot in a way that most 7 foot guys can't. And I thought he looked really good in space defensively. And I've always liked how he jumps. He's a real, just like easy jumper that I think he's one of those guys that if you were a team that has another traditional big, you can actually kind of play him at the four. Like if you are like how like San Antonio uses like Zach Collins, you know what I mean? Like that's a fit that you could use him. Like if you're a team like how Boston, like I don't know that like he's a guy that like Boston would necessarily use, but like a guy like Luke Kornet, you know what I mean? Like that kind of a role. Like they're just these stretch bigs. And I think the fact that he's really good at shooting and moving into a shot in ways that are functional to an NBA game is like genuinely interesting to me. I get that he's old, but like those are the five that I like that I would like to see move on to Elite Camp. Everybody else, I'm kind of just like, I don't know that I need to see. Say like, I'm not gonna be mad if they don't get the invite. You know what I mean? Like, I'm not gonna be mad if they get an invite, but it's like, you're a good Portsmouth guy, and I could see teams starting to kick the tires on you. But those are the five that like I'd really like to see take that next step.
Yeah, so I'm gonna have a lot of carryover in the names.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
There's a little bit of a change up. So I think Isaiah Crawford is like, he's the bell of the ball for this tournament. I think that a lot of people, again, I mentioned Sam Vecenie in his most recent big board, and he has him included, right? So if Vecenie is hearing this, then there's a lot of league interest, right? And like, we've heard league interest too, right?
And Jalen Williams was the other guy that was on Vecenie's board. So I would imagine that's probably looking good for him too.
Exactly, yeah. And Jalen Williams, again, for a lot of the same reasons, his shot looked really good too, by the way. Like,
he's hit tough ones all year. Like,
yeah,
I know it's lower volume, but I can't totally hand wave it.
He looked really good, and again, like one of these like physically strong guys too, that where you like you want that frame. That's why I took both of those in my mock, right? We already talked about Minix a lot during this. I feel like that goes without saying. I'm going to go with two bigs next. I'm going to double down with you on Carlson. I feel like the shot, the defense, the screen, and like his one, like the lanes that he created for the ball handler and like how he could fend off his man and get into the paint and like do a couple counters, like did mix it up a little bit on the boards too, and some good help defense too, which I thought was really well. And then I got to go with my guy, Joel Soriano. I just think that like the need for bigs in the NBA, like you, where you always kind of feel like I can always just go get another one. I think that Joel held really well through this tournament, man. Like I had big expectations for him. He crashed the boards. He did a lot of DHO stuff. He did a lot of post stuff. He did a lot of moving the next pass along and stuff like that. set really hard, good screens, crashed a glass, like got putbacks. He looked, in my opinion, he looked like the most NBA ready big on the court right now. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I've been kind of harping on for the past couple of weeks now. So again, my five, I got to go Crawford, Williams, Minix, Carlson, Soriano are my five that I, if I'm inviting people to a combine, those are my five that I'm inviting out.
Yeah. Soriano is the guy that I think we've like kind of gone back and forth about quite a bit. Rick, you've always sort of bought him and I've been like a little bit more, like I kind of bought him for the year and I'm like getting cold feet with him a little bit. Yeah. I wrote this column on like 11 guys and that I think, you know, I could see getting an NBA deal or that I would kind of pursue. And I think I need to move Soriano into that group because it's just like, am I just playing myself at a certain point? Like I know what the flaws are. I know that he's older and whatever, but it's just like the guy just produces and like, maybe it's not sexy, but like at a certain point, I think, yeah, I think you're just like playing yourself by like
hit a three he could in the tournament.
That's the end. Like I've always bought the shot. Like we talked about last week, like always shot the long too well, knocked down his threes. He's good.
His measurements too, like the weight.
That was big. Yep. That was another really good measurement. With Soriano, what was like a near 7'4" wingspan?
Yeah, like actually a real 6'10", like actually 6'10", 280. Again, like the concern that I have with him is the verticality. You know what I mean?
And yeah,
I
felt like that showed us.
He didn't jump well, but he's so strong that he could fend off like other really strong bigs, like even bigger bigs than him, these longer ones with like good wingspans too. Like he shielded off and was able to get putbacks, things like that. So that's hard. Like he just does so many good things that you want a big man to do. And he's an intelligent ball player as well. I'm probably making people sick of my Soriano praises, but I just think that there's a clear NBA path for him, man. I really buy it.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's more than fair. Any what have you got? We didn't really talk about what you've got coming out this week. We texted about it. I'm really excited to read it. What do you got in the lab that's gonna be at nocealingsnba.com? I've got my Portsmouth recap that'll be up by the time most of you guys are listening to this. Steven, what have you got cooking this week?
Yeah, so I just won the prior week. I did a Peyton Sanford article, which got a lot of really good reception, which I was really happy about because it's my first prospect piece that I've done since I've been back. My second one, a little bit higher up people's big boards, a guy you might have heard of, Dalton Connect. And this piece is not going to be what you think it is. I'm not just basically just like subbing out Peyton Sanford for Dalton Connect's name because they're both white perceived shooters, right? I think I have more examples of why I think his defense is better than what it's getting credit for and why he's better putting the ball on the ground than what he's getting credit for. I am dangerously considering him as a top five prospect, Maxwell. Mm-hmm. I know that you're not supposed to. I know that he's a senior. I know that there's freshmen that are bigger, longer. Definitely not a lot of them are stronger because Connect's a really strong guy. But I'm looking at a guy who is just like, every level of competition that he's gone up, his production and efficiency has gone with him and gotten better. And the one dedicated year that he had at Tennessee that he wanted to dedicate to getting stronger, he did, and get better on the defensive side, he really did. And I really wanted to highlight that. Not saying that he's going to come in there and be Stephon Castle or anything like that on the defensive side of the ball, but I just think that this notion that he is going to get tagged, again, just keeping it real, you know, white wing player, he's going to get dubbed as a shooter, that he's going to be a liability on the defensive side of the floor. He's got things that he's got to clean up. Again, I'm not sitting here saying he's perfect on the defensive side, but I don't think that he's nowhere near as far behind as like where some of the draft buzz is getting him. And I really wanted to kind of emphasize that in the piece. So yeah, that piece is going to be coming out soon, I believe Tuesday. I'm going to be shifting the writing schedule around a little bit, but I think that that's still coming out Tuesday, and I'm super excited to get that one out and just kind of see what people think, because it's not just going to be 8 clips of him shooting a 3-point shot and me saying, yeah, he's really good at doing this.
He can shoot. Yeah. Yeah. I'm super excited for it. Like when you text me and you're like, I'm spending so much time on his defense for this, I was like, ooh, all right. I'm intrigued. So can't wait to read that. Follow Steven on Twitter/X at Steven G Hoops. Follow me at Boundboards. Follow us all at No Ceilings NBA. Make sure to subscribe to the Substack, subscribe to us on all podcast platforms, and subscribe to No Ceilings Plus. Corey dropped a huge intel piece last week, and there was a lot of just high quality work from our Hoop Summit crew. So make sure you're plugged in for that.
And if I may plug the YouTube too, No Ceilings NBA, they dropped a video blog, which unbiased, like was hilarious. And I thought was fantastic work from them. Like there's going to be like a quote of the year where Albert said something along the lines of like the haters thought that they, that we would be stopped. And Rucker was said something along the lines of like, and I'm actually impressed they were right because they were having microphone issues at some point, but yeah, that vlog was fantastic. I got
it. It was really fun for sure. Yeah. Go check that out too while you're here. So that'll do it. So until next week, thank you all for joining us and we will see you all soon.
Much love, y'all.